Warning. What you're about to hear will be graphic in nature. Is it a personal experience? It is a life event. It will be graphic in nature. I will be depicting violence and things that have happened to me. The names will be changed of the people to protect their identity. This is my story.
Oh, all right.
Thank you guys for tuning in to HTL today. There will be no fancy intro or crazy animated antics. Maybe a few breaks in here. This is something that I just need to externalize. And in the beginning, I gave a warning, a disclaimer. And I tell you this story in hopes of motivating you to your own personal trials and tribulations. This might be two or three parts. I might take two commercial breaks in this one just to shake it off. This is a tough one. This is a tough one. I've mulled over this one for 2 weeks, and it's a bit tough to externalize. There's very few people that I've told this story to, so it takes... This has taken me quite a bit. Yeah. Well, let me paint you a backstory. Just so you have some sort of context and you can understand what was going on around this time. This was July 7th, 1987. And was something that happened. Now, I was a younger kid, of course, 87, but it made me 7 years old. And I didn't grow up, in the proverbial suburbs, that kind of thing. We were always very poor. We moved around a lot. I lived in a lot of predominantly Spanish, low-income areas, and because it was affordable. And so I got to grow up around different types of culture, very diverse culture. Like I said, predominantly Hispanic, Spanish, Mexican in descent. And a lot of it was very, very gang-orientated. And you know, I didn't pay much mind to it. When you're that young, you know, you're kind of just roaming around, right? You're carefree. And I used to hang out with multiple groups of people, and I always had this ability to keep my groups of friends separated. I would hang out, you know, with my Caucasian friends that were, you know, had families, mothers, fathers, white picket fence houses. And then I would cross the railroad tracks where I lived, and I would hang out with other groups of kids that didn't have much, that lived a completely different lifestyle. And I always kept those two groups separate. It was mostly out of respect. I didn't want to close myself off from the opportunities in life, and I knew that young. That we didn't belong crossing those boundaries, right? I didn't want to bring, you know, even myself was hard for me to go into the suburbs. It was, believe it or not, it was actually scary. I used to fear going into these manicured, cult-looking like housing areas, you know, where all these families of you know, that were living well off with their nice Cadillacs and stuff. It was intimidating to me because I had always known the other side. So again, I would kind of like have friends in one area, have friends in the other, but I would never bring them together. It wasn't my job to introduce them to each other. It was my job, I felt, to enjoy their company regardless of their economic status. So I would hang out a lot you know, with different sets of people. I was always absorbing and learning. And in that time, we couldn't afford much. And I would ride my bicycle around a lot, around cities. And I would see things, you know, you hear things, gunshots, ambulances, stuff like that. But you really become desensitized to a lot of that, stuff. See, in the area I grew up in, our house had been shot up, I don't know, from drive-bys 3-4 times. You didn't really give it much thought. It was just something that kind of happened, and, you know, it didn't happen to you on that day, so you just kind of kept moving. And it was too young to really digest that situation. Ignorant. You know, just being a kid. You know, I just wanted to ride my bike. I wanted to be free. I liked the wind in my hair. I liked laughing and going and building dirt jumps and fucking eating shit and, you know, just hanging out under the bridge with my buddies, sneaking in a cigarette that somebody stole from their mom. Like, I don't know. It was weird. And then I would go have a spaghetti dinner around a table with this other family that would sit around, and I'd be scared shitless because it was so foreign to me. So it was weird. It was weird. It was really weird. It's a strange kind of situation that I would always put myself in. And I could never really understand why I did that, but I think it was to absorb the differences. I never really looked at people for their exterior. I just, good people were good people, and I would hang out with good people. You know, somebody would show me respect and was kind, and I would be kind and respectful back. And, you know, that's what I sought out. And, you know, you can find them everywhere. It doesn't matter, you know, the amount of money you have. You know, I can honestly say that every time I've ever been, my house has ever been robbed or broken into, has been from my own color and my own race. I have never actually had any issues with the lower income class, per se. Even when I was a kid. Now, mind you, I did have to fight quite a bit when I was a kid, and I didn't like fighting. I wasn't a fighter. It's not that, I just didn't like, you know, as a man, you're supposed to be, you know, busting heads and all this other shit, the proverbial man code. And it never really fit me. It never really was my character. He was a young man. And, it didn't always turn out that way. It didn't turn out that way later in life. But as a young man, I was just more about taking things in. Yeah. Well, I'm going to take a small break, and then the ad will be a little bit more upbeat, and we're just going to get right into it. I'll be right back. The day in question was July 7th. And around July 4th, me and another buddy of mine, we're going to call him Manny, again, to protect the names of the people and the families. We used to go ride around, and like we couldn't afford fireworks. Our families didn't get into what a lot of these families got into. So we would go ride around. And for, I would say, at least a week before and a week after, every night people would be lighting off fireworks. And we would ride all around the city. We would go all over the place and you know, just sit and watch, you know, these parents and stuff sending out their kids, you know, lighting fireworks off, teaching them how to do it, you know, and enjoying. You'd see people cracking beers and, you know, TVs in the yard outside the garage. People would have like, it's almost like a party. It was a celebration. And we would watch. We would go around and we'd try to find like the coolest setup and, you know, where people are launching off the biggest fireworks. And it was all over. It was in the streets, you know, these cul-de-sacs and these little dead-end roads all over the city, you know. And we would go in places that we knew we didn't quite belong, right? And when I say didn't belong, it means the lower income going over to the you know, the rich side of town and watching the expensive fireworks, right? Watching the good stuff, because that's where the good stuff was. That's where the cash was. That's where they had excess income. They could do those types of things. So we would go there, and on this day, we were riding all over the city, and we started early. I mean, we probably left the house. I mean, I know I left my house to go to his house at probably like 10 o'clock in the morning. And people were lighting fireworks all day. I mean, even during the day, you could see it like all the time. And you know, it was cool. But at Poots, she's crazy. Throughout the day. So it was probably about, I don't know, I'd say 3-4 o'clock. And me and Manny went to this gas station, this one gas station that we always like to go to. It had a Mortal Kombat game in there. And he would steal quarters from his mother. And we'd take turns playing some Mortal Kombat. I think it was Mortal Kombat. My memory could be eluding myself. And we would like scoop together some change and stuff. Like we'd find change as we were riding around town. Like we'd be combing parking lots, riding around parking lots, trying to find like a dollar. We'd find like quarters, dimes, and nickels and stuff. And we would pull that stuff together. And we would get like nachos. You know, we would get small pack of like Mambas or something, little candies. We would just sit there and we would talk about some of the craziest stuff, man. We would talk about like, he would talk about like the girls, you know, like, I mean, we would talk about like shit that would happen at school because we went to two different schools. And I always look forward to that time. I always look forward to him telling me about what was going on at his school or what he's seen or, how, I mean, just regular back and forth shit, you know? And it was a good time. It was a good time. And on this day, we were sitting there. And it's a little booth. Just a little like half booth. I don't know if you guys have ever been at a gas station where they got like the little, I don't know what you want to call them, like plastic booth style chairs that are really like slippery. And you know, like the little half table by the window, kind of like as you walk towards the bathroom. And we're having a conversation. And a man walked up to the window and knocked on the window. And as I looked up, this man put a gun to the window and I ducked. I hit the seat. I heard the flash. I heard the glass. And about what seems like an hour later in my mind, Manny was staring at me, but Manny didn't look the same. I watched as he laid across from me, as his life left his eyes. And that was tough. I ran. I split. I got out of there so fucking quick. I left my bike there. I cut through this little alley. I flew through a fence. I swear to God, I broke a hole in that fence. I ran and I ran and I ran. And I got to like this bridge where we used to hang out. Like I said, he used to steal cigarettes from his ma. And I just lost my shit. Something snapped that day. And I don't really know until maybe about 20 years later what the repercussions of that was, what had happened, how it had changed me internally. The time, the event. And I had, after that, I changed and didn't notice. Something in me had shifted. And I didn't see it. And other people around me could see it. And I knew they could. Because I could still smell. I could still hear. My dreams were the shattered mess of that day, just replaying and replaying. And I, a lot of families around me. Now, you know, like I said, looking back, parents would stop letting their kids hang out with me. Sorry, he can't come over. He's not allowed in this house. I was unconsciously, I had shifted. I had become somebody else in that moment. And it stuck with me for a very, very long time. That change that I didn't notice. That I didn't have a clue as to my actions had shifted. Until later in life when I really hurt somebody. When I had almost taken a civilian life and blacked out and snapped. And I still to this day have no recollection of that said event. And that was the moment. That was the catalyst that forced me to look back at a closed off life of actions, of things, of certain sets of events. Because after that event, I was living very, very vicariously. I was on the edge. I was into drugs. I was riding dirt bikes as fast as they would fucking go. Again, in hindsight, I was looking. I see the pattern. I see the shift. I see the change. But I didn't deal with it for 20 years. It's whatever. It's man code. Suck it up. Shit happens to this people. Every day, people always tell you. And I wanted to exhaust that. I wanted to know why. I wanted to improve myself, and it took me 20 years to actually dig into it. To what became my violent tendencies, what became my self-destructive behavior. And it took that catalyst. It took me going to such an extreme that I actually had to question myself. Is this you? Is this your life? Are you going to be dictated by past events? I had to deal with the fact of what happened and what was making me so angry. Who are you? At 27 is a tough, tough road to go down. It's a very tough road to go down. And I had to shift because I knew somewhere in my heart, my soul, this isn't who I was. This isn't who I wanted to be. And I only knew that because of that pivotal turning point, that catalyst, that end of the road. What the fuck are you doing? Moment. See, I had to hit the wall. That's the kind of damage that was done then, was it took me hitting that wall to stop and look and digest the situation, to be okay with a random act. And come to find out, after digging through it, street justice had taken its toll. I reached back out to the family after 2 generations, the mother was still around and she was still around, and we had a conversation, and she wasn't mad at me. She was thankful for the time that I spent with Manny and the things we would do, and I was always respectable at their house, and she thanked me. And I think that conversation, that dialect, was the shifting point as well. That I wasn't guilty of anything. See, I think I held on to a lot of guilt for leaving. You want to stand up, right? You want to fight or flight. I flight. It's a man, the gun. Just shot my friend. I was confused, but I was fucking angry. I was pissed. For 20 years, I was pissed. The situation that another human being would be so careless woke me up to the way of the world. Dog eat dog. It was tough. It was tough. What was even more tough is realizing at 27, when I looked back at a whirlwind of behavior, of destructive behavior, of stupidity, and how it compounded. It compounded. It created. I just kept creating more shit for myself because of a situation, right? An unforeseen event. You can't predict. Shit could happen to anybody. But this time it happened to me, and it was somebody that I cared about. It was a friend. It was important. I'm going to take a small break and get some water. I'll be right back. I appreciate you sitting through those. I take just moments to collect my thoughts. So again, looking back at 27 when I started just to face the music, right? I'm 43 now, so it's not like I've lived in this enlightened life for a long time. It didn't start with vocalizing the situation. I started doing my own research. I started looking at sociology and psychology and trying to understand the brain. I started to self-educate myself, and I started to change my surroundings. I started to realize that a lot of the company I kept was just feeding into my fuel, right? So misery loves company, and internally in my soul, I was miserable, and I had continued these actions for so long without looking at why, right? I needed to know how my brain, how my emotions, and how all of this tied together like a sandwich was dealing with it, right? I need to look at it. I need to analyze it. See, if I can't find the emotion to handle it, I need to find some logic. And that was my goal. That was my game plan, was to find some logic in dealing with just myself. Now, what had happened had happened. And what I had done, I had blamed logically on what had happened. But I didn't really understand how such a young mind could be manipulated by an event, by sights, smells in that fashion, and how it would alter, right? And I know now some of the things, right? From, like I said, from the self-education, from the picking up of learning, right? Because nobody was going to do it for me. I had to do it for myself. There wasn't a shrink or a girlfriend or a homie that was just going to wave some sort of magic wand. And this took me to fix me, to stop a series of behavior and actually ask myself who I wanted to be. Where what are my morals? See, I was always at war with my morals. I was always one that wanted to help, but suppressed it. Wanted to be kind, but suppressed it. Wasn't a bully, but was very quick to be very sharp, if that makes any sense to you. Was very, very callous in my actions. Very sharp, very witty, very sharp. And I knew that somewhere inside of me, that wasn't it. That was not it. So I dug. And I dug. I spent years by myself. You know, I would have friends and I would know acquaintances, but I wouldn't really have relationships. It'd be years in between myself and ladies. And it's not that I didn't like it. It's just I never was really, really comfortable during that phase with letting somebody in. And I know why now. Because last time, the first time, one of the few first times, was that event, right? Was a good friend, somebody I could have hung out the rest of my life with, at least at that point, that's where my mind was. Or that's where the emotion was. And that was taken from me. So I think that I went the rest of my life avoiding connections, deep, meaningful connections, because I didn't want them to end. So just don't make them. Just don't start. Meet people, hang out with them, but keep them at arm's length. Keep everything you have guarded, protected, wall off, hide in your fort. Put your armor on. Everything's cool. That external facade was in the end starting to own me. And it wasn't good. It wasn't good. And I bring you guys to this event, this life portion, because a lot of the people that listen to this show, to this podcast, know me from somewhere else. But they don't know why I am the way I am today. And that's why I felt it was important to choke out that story. Not only is it healing for me, I've never really vocalized it in a large way, right? In a larger than, like, there's maybe two people, three people on the planet. Manny's mom. One of my ex-girlfriends, and a buddy of mine that sadly passed away as well in an accident. So this was very tough. This whole road, this whole journey to picking up the pieces, to self-divulging. In the end, I wanted to tell that story because I know a lot of you. I've gone through some shit. I'm not alone. This world is a dog-eat-dog world. Some people have had less than desirable sexual experiences when they were younger. A lot of people have gone through similar things to what I've gone through, and they don't realize it until they're 30, 40 years old that it shifted them. I was lucky that I realized it. I was lucky that I hit that wall. I wasn't lucky for what had happened, but I was thankful to be here right now. It is crazy as 2020 is, and as volatile as everybody wants things to be. The addiction to misery right now, I see it, and it's sickening because I used to be addicted to misery, my own misery. And I've overcome it. I haven't forgot about it. I didn't push it away or lock it away. I found a way to utilize it. I found a way to find myself in it. See, not only did that create a negative situation, it gave me the bottom of the barrel. See, it put me in a position where the only way I could look was up. I was at the bottom. I was at the bottom of my soul. I was at the bottom of my heart. I was at the bottom of society. I was at the bottom of everything. I was unloved by others and myself. I had destroyed everything. Truthfully, I had destroyed everything inside. And I had no other way to go but up. There was a lot of folks that might be in the audience that are dealing with or haven't dealt with a situation, haven't looked at it, haven't analyzed it. And I hope me telling my small slice of something that altered my life, me telling you this time, gives you the strength to speak about something that altered your life, right? To at least have that internal dialogue with yourself and find a way to, I don't want to use the word overcome, because that's like conquer. And, you know, those are powerful words that people like to sensualize to sell something. I don't want that. I want you to think about it. If I can stand here and force myself to externalize something in this manner, then I believe you can too. And I don't mean you have to jump on the internet and tell your story, but tell somebody. Hopefully there's somebody you can find that you can trust. And if you don't have that, at least say it to yourself. Write it down. Look at the pattern. Find a way to educate yourself as to what's going on and why you might be laying that way. See, as you know me now, a lot of people know that I have a very positive outlook. It's because of these things. It's because of that fight, that internal turmoil, that struggle, that I found that not all is bad. And misery loves company, and I was giving it all of the company. And there were so many other things that I could do. I didn't realize how much I loved nature because I was too busy loving hatred. The anger is easy. Kindness takes work. And being kind to yourself is even harder. Some people might say that, you know, well, I go out to dinner, I treat myself to a brand new truck, or I this or that. Sure. But I mean genuinely being kind to yourself. Not being hard on yourself for every aspect of things you do. Like when you spill your coffee, you're not in your head screaming at yourself, belittling yourself. You're not giving in to those things. And I don't do that. There are some times where I have my setbacks. where I find myself shifting, and there's some great people that thankfully keep me afloat. But when I get here to this house by myself, I look around, and I talked in Too Raw, Too Real last Tuesday about my issues with love and my overworking. That was another aspect that I had not looked into until I hit a wall. I hit a wall of failed relationships and realized that it's me. I need to look in the mirror. I need to see my behavior, my things, right? I need to internalize and analyze and self-analyze and self-improve. Because I believe that you, me, can be better versions of ourselves if we want to be. If we're willing to go to that place, if we're willing to have that discussion with ourselves and say, okay, that was broken. But what can I do to fix at least to the point where it's functional? And I think that's the goal of Too Raw, Too Real Tuesday. It's for me to share some of the things that I've never like externalized and given for examples as to what made the human being that I have become and the person that I'm proud to be. I know I can be outspoken and highly animated, but that's because I've learned to have fun. I've learned to love. I've learned to let go of things. I don't harbor ill will or thoughts anymore. I let things slide so much easier now because I know the pain of holding on to violence and anger. It was all consuming, and it consumed me. It's a rather long podcast. It was a rather hard one. I have actually recorded this one. This would be probably the 12th time. And each time it chokes me up. And I hope that my vulnerability in this episode doesn't put you off in any sort of way. Again, I apologize in advance. In a way, but not 100% apologize. Because I have to be okay with it. I have to be okay with it. And I hope you are too, and I hope you can find a place. And if you need somebody, there's probably somebody closer than you think. It's you. And I am my own worst enemy, but I'm also my biggest advocate. And again, I want to thank you for your time for being here. I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to go for a walk. A little bit of nature. I need to cool off. Good souls of HTL. Whatever you can, man. Do whatever you can. Hit me up on Twitter. Twitter.com/LostSoulBrand. If this hit you, if this touched you, this maybe rolled you into taking a look and analyzing. I will be deleting all hate mail. I'm just not going to deal with the fucking trolls. This shit ain't for you. It ain't for the trolls. It ain't for the less than desirables. It ain't trying to self-improve. This ain't for the people. It's for you. Thank you for understanding. Thank you for listening. Peace, love, and chicken grease, guys. And as always, be good to yourself, man. Be good to others. I'll see you real soon.